The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
It's 9:25 and I'm more than happy to welcome Mr. Gordon Goodwin to the studio this morning. Welcome, Gordon. Nice to see you.
Thanks, Ryan. Glad to be here.
I think your story will resonate with so many people today because it's about something. We're pretty much the same age. And I'd like you to go back to childhood for a second, to when you were maybe at school or what have you, and you realised, I'm just not getting this when you're reading or whatever. What was happening?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've always struggled with reading. I mean, I'm 40. I still struggle with reading. And in school, you know, it was, I suppose you start off in junior infants and everything's wonderful and everything's great. And then you start learning to read through various different books. You progress to senior infants and so on. So I think the first time I realised that a real problem was, I always tried to avoid it. To avoid reading.
Sure.
And there was one particular time when I was talking to somebody the other day, I remembered, I was in senior infants, and I was asked to go out to get a projector or something like that to bring down to the school. And this was great. I mean, when you got to go out into the school and go out and
escape.
Exactly. Yeah. So I went up to third class and to get this projector, and I walked in, and at that moment, another boy was obviously struggling to read, and the teacher was giving him a bit of a hard time. And I remember saying, listen, this little junior infants boy or first class boy will show you how it's done. And boy, did she pick the wrong kid, you know. So I took
read.
Up the book. She made me read in front of the class, stand up in front of the class and read. And obviously I went into tears, and it's certainly a lasting memory.
Yeah.
But shortly after that, I would have been diagnosed with dyslexia. Now, it was never made clear to me. You know, it's only in recent years did I kind of understand what the classes. I used to go out of school every Wednesday. I have a clear memory of this.
Yeah.
When I was in kind of first class or second class, and I'd go to I could tell you where the house is.
Yes.
You know, but I don't remember the lady's name. And I'd go for about an hour, and we'd read stories and books with different colour pages on it and so on.
Yes.
And so forth. Now, nobody had ever said to me that I was dyslexic at this point in time, But so I did that for about a year or two, and I suppose then that all ended. And whether it had a great effect on me at the time, I'm not quite sure. Yeah. I suppose.
Can I ask you what dyslexia is in terms of what you were seeing when we'd all be reading words? What do you see, or what's happening on the page?
Well, it's funny for me. I mean, you know, I always say this. I even recently read a news headline, and I said to my wife, "Look at this. This is crazy." And I read it out to her as I saw it, and she said, "Gordon, that's not what that says at all." And then I realised, oh my God, it's the words work themselves properly for me.
Yeah.
It's funny when I'm reading with my little boy Ben. You know, since he started going to school and he started learning to read and so on and so forth, we'd try to read little books at night, and I'd be there to watch through how he's reading. And I remember one time about a year ago, we were reading. Me and Ben was reading, and I was there to kind of chaperone him reading. And my little 5-year-old daughter was sitting on top of my shoulder, and he read this line. And then my little 5-year-old said, "Daddy, that's not what that says." And she was right. It was right. Ben had got it wrong. I'd got it wrong in the exact same way as he had.
How does that feel?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. It only has started to feel in the last couple of years, because what I've done my whole life is kind of circumvented it. I mean, I've tried to surround myself with people who can do that for me and do certain things for me and write and read particular sections of things.
So let's go back to school again just for a second, because you broached it in a way with the teacher you mentioned in on Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah.
How did you hide then for secondary school and things like that? Because it's a lot based on reading.
Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is.
That takes some scheming to get around it.
It does. Yeah. Well, I often think kind of that's where I honed my negotiation skills that have
I bet.
Served me quite well in life. Yeah.
Okay.
But I did a lot of hiding. Actually, later I'll tell you about that in a little while.
Tell me, where did you hide or what would you do?
Well, actually in the toilets at one point, but I'll come back to that in a minute. But yeah, moving through school,
yes.
I mean, you know, junior school, I had an up and down approach to school. I mean, I had one really, really wonderful teacher who really worked very, very hard with me. And again, you know, there's a lot of children in school. There's 30 children and there's different people with different level skill sets. So it's difficult for... To be captured
sure.
all the time.
Sure.
And indeed, as you get into senior school, that gets even more difficult. But I remember fifth class in school was a really strong year for me. I was feeling really good
yes.
after having a difficult start. Now, I must say I enjoyed school. I enjoyed
yeah.
my friends.
You weren't
enjoyed
in the horror.
I wasn't the type of guy who dreaded going in. I mean, I pulled a fair few sickies in my time like everybody else did, but I wasn't worried about going into school any day.
Yes.
And so the fifth class was really quite good and I thought I excelled to a certain extent. And then I went to sixth class and fell back again. And then obviously moving into senior school. A part here is just, it's kind of important, I suppose, to go back to my little boy's story is I always remember I went to school in a school, so I went from five all the way up to senior school.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have to suffer the worry of moving in with new people or new kids when I went into senior school.
Sure.
Ironically, that year, my parents decided to take us to away on holidays to California late in the summer, and we didn't return until 2 weeks into the school year. And so I came home. And I thought this was great in Disneyland while everybody else was doing their homework. And I came home, arrived in school 2 weeks late, and all my friends were gone separate ways. It was a very, very difficult time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I suppose you're in that atmosphere where you can hide and you can, you know, hide away from teachers. You're moving. You're moving through different classes and so on.
Did you
so
kind of make yourself less visible?
I did.
The toilet,
yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, I did. Well, the toilet was
your second home by the sounds of it.
It was. Well, that was business studies. and which is ironic again, but
yeah.
That was business studies in second class and second year. And I remember going into the class on one of the very early stages and the teacher was fond of people reading.
Okay.
And he asked people to do a paragraph. I could feel it as it was coming to my turn, and I really struggled with this paragraph. And he told me to go home and write out the paragraph 100 times, which was, you know,
Victorian.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Needless to say, I didn't do that. So what I decided to do the following day was hide in the toilet for the class, and I did that for about 4 or 5 months before I was caught.
That's a long time
for a
student to be missing from a class.
It is, yeah, and nobody really noticed, you know. So that's what I did to kind of hide away. I always try to. Yeah, you're right. I try to be invisible in school. At a point, you know, you get caught out, and teachers start taking a little bit more interest, or maybe they were taking interest in me. But you know, you can get away with homework
How did you get away with the Leaving Cert?
Well, the Leaving Cert, I knew that was going to be a nightmare.
Yeah.
So I decided to get a job and be employed for the time when the Leaving Cert results arrived. So I was doing my Leaving Cert and it was on a Saturday night after kind of the first couple of exams, English Paper 1, English Paper 2, and I'd met somebody that I know from a car dealership down not too far from where I live, and I asked her, were there any jobs going there? And she said, yeah, somebody's just left. I thought this was a great piece of luck.
Mm.
So I went down to the dealership on the Saturday. I got all dressed up instead of studying like I should have been, but studying again wasn't my thing. I waited pretty much all day for the sales manager to speak with me for a brief period of time. And he said, yeah, listen, nice to meet you. You need to come back and interview with the boss next kind of Thursday. And that was right smack bang in the middle of my technical drawing exam. So I had to sneak out of technical drawing very, very early in order to go and get this job. And thankfully I got the job. And the plan was that I'd get this job And my parents would be so proud of me, they wouldn't want to know about the Leaving Cert results.
Another so, red a decoy.
Yes,
for them.
Another decoy. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so lo and behold, I took the job, and I was working. I mean, I was working from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m, and I was working Saturdays and everything. You work quite hard in that game, but and the Leaving Cert results arrived. I went down to pick them up, and I pulled up outside the school, and I opened the dreaded envelope, and it was atrocious. So I sealed the envelope and I rang my parents and I told them, and they said, listen, look, that's okay. The plan had worked. They said, that's okay. You're working now. You're doing great. You're doing your thing. Don't worry about it at all. Yeah. So I put away the Leaving Cert results, and that was it. The plan obviously was originally to get the results, get away with it, and then in a month's time, leave the job. But that never happened. I continued in work.
And on you went. What did you do for your wedding speech?
Well, this is the thing. I can't read out something. So in any sort of speech I'd have to make, I'll always have to memorise it. I'll have it in front of me like it's like I'm reading off it, but I'll have to memorise it.
But you're not reading anything?
No, I'm not. No, but it's just a tool, really, a prompt, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll have to remember it. If I'm in work, if I ever make any speeches or anything like that, I'll always have to read it out, read it. Take me a long time to read. I mean, I can read, and I'm progressing much better in the last number of years with, I suppose, smartphones and things like this. I'm trying to read better.
Have you ever read a book?
No. Well, I have. Yes.
Which one?
I read my first book.
What was it?
About 2 weeks ago.
Really?
My first ever book. Well, other than Anne and Barry Now in School, which I struggled through.
Yeah.
My first ever book was a book called Rabbit and Bear. And this is a book that my little boy got from Santa Claus on at Christmas. And again, his struggles with reading are very close to my heart.
Well, let's talk about that. First of all, congratulations on reading that. And I don't mean that in a cynical or flippant way at all. It's a massive achievement, and it hopefully puts you on the road to further literacy and ability to grapple with it. But your son, Ben, is another reason we wanted to talk to you this morning, because he also has dyslexia.
He does.
And I don't know if it's genetic. I mean, or hereditary, or whatever the word might be. But when did you realize he had the same issues?
Well, again, you know, he started off in Montessori and he was wonderful, and then he went to school in a Holly Park Boys' School.
Yeah,
a fantastic school. We were thrilled about that. And he was doing great. It's funny, he was so interested. He used to come home at night after school and sit his little 3-year-old sister down like she was the student and he was the teacher.
Telling him,
exactly. And he loved it.
Yeah.
So he progressed very well in junior infants and so on and so forth. And I think in senior infants, they started to say, listen, we're not quite sure. There's a couple little things we noticed here.
Okay.
Obviously, my wife, or you know, I hadn't noticed anything, or my wife was maybe reading with him, maybe she'd noticed some things. So we took the decision to go and get him assessed when he started in first class. And so he was diagnosed with severe dyslexia. He's a very high IQ, but he's severely dyslexic. And reading is really, really challenging for him, like me.
Yes.
And so we were. It was recommended to us that we try and get him into one of the reading schools, and as
to remind you, he's 9 years old.
He's 9 years old now. Yeah,
and you said he's got a high IQ, and he sounds like a great
he
kid.
He's a great little boy. Yeah.
Did the dyslexia, once it was diagnosed, does it do things to your confidence, yours or his, or were you able to learn or teach from your experience?
Yeah. I mean, he's a very bright little guy, and he loves, you know, he's very fun loving, and he's very interested in a lot of things. And if he captures something that he's interested in, there's no stopping him. But as far as reading is concerned, and homework and spellings, you know, that was difficult, you know, and my wife found that very difficult. And again, it would be like me, he would have rebelled against it and not wanted to be involved in it at all. And we found homework very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And indeed the school, were really, really good. Really, really good, I must say. But they can only do so much with the resources they have. And he was in a special class for an hour or something like that, with some other boys, I must add, in the school, and who had reading difficulties and so on and so forth. But they really were great to help, and they were involved in this decision process and all that kind of stuff as to whether we were going to move them.
There was no sense that any child was left behind.
No.
But this brings us neatly enough to the reading school. Now, this is a phenomenon I did not know about until I was invited to go to one and speak to the parents and or at least the teachers and children there a few years ago. Would you explain to us what it is in theory?
Yeah, it's a very small. Careful, I don't make the the wrong words, but it's a very targeted approach to children's needs. And in our particular school, it's focused for children with severe dyslexia. Yeah. Now, each class, there's about 8 or 9 students in a class, and they have this particular program called the Wilson Reading. It's a 12-step program to teach kids. And my understanding of it, I might add here, to a certain extent, I've stepped back from the understanding of how it works because I struggle with same. And ironically, my little boy is taking interest in trying to teach me
good
the Wilson ways and so on, hence the rabbit and bear.
Okay.
It's a very, very small class. And they're very targeted to go back to basics and teach children how to read and teach children. For me and for Ben, you know, most children are taught via phonics, and phonics makes, I suppose, an answer to your earlier question I couldn't come up with, but phonics is a nightmare for me. I just can't understand.
This is where if you spell the word shop, it's up.
Yeah. And then there's tricky words in this, and that's where he struggled and that's where I struggle. So the school is extremely attentive. I must say I was relatively sceptical when this was pushed towards us, but he's there about 5 months now, and that's why I wrote in, because I'm extremely impressed with the progress, and yeah. I was sceptical.
And he leaves his own school.
He does.
For 2 years.
Yes, for two years.
And he's in this particular school, the reading school. There are 3 of them in Dublin.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, three in Ireland, I know. That's,
three in Ireland, that's correct.
And yeah. they're very limited space and huge demand, obviously.
Yeah.
And
we were very lucky to get the place, and that was really, you know, everybody that's spoken to us about this. I mean, we had a long process. We had nearly 2 years to decide whether we were going to go in for this. I mean, we had a year, certainly, since we got awarded the place, and the places are very, very hard to get.
And 5 months in, Gordon, how's he doing? Have you noticed the difference? His confidence, his ability to read, etc.?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, there's the rabbit and bear, where he's taken an interest. Homework, he's taken an interest.
Right.
And I must say, I'm dying to see him in 2 years' time when he goes back into school and kind of see how he's progressed and how well he sits back into school. And but he has progressed really, really well. And I mean, only just a week ago, we were brought into school for, they have this art week, and every class, they take on a small project, all the individual students, for art. And they all paint these pictures, and they all have to kind of do a presentation on their artist. And, you know, for Ben, my little boy, for me to stand up at 9 in front of 62 other children and a load of parents and make a speech, albeit written on card that he'd probably written, was so impressive to me. Yeah. I never thought he'd do that. I mean, I wouldn't do that now. Like, I've never done a reading in a church because at Mass or anything like that, because I'd be terrified about it.
It's a funny thing, but, you know, even dyslexia or otherwise, public speaking is terrifying for people.
Yeah.
In the school I was in yesterday, I said to the children, you know, put up your hand if you have a question. And I always keep an eye on the ones who don't put up the hand.
Yeah.
Because I always say, and I said, look, those of you who didn't put up your hand, don't be worried about it, because it's actually quite terrifying. Because the question I'd been asked was, do you get nervous presenting the Late Late Show? And I said, yeah, because I do. I always get, the nerves fuel your excitement, I suppose. And so it's perfectly normal. I think that's the thing about public speaking and nervousness, is not to tell people you shouldn't be so nervous. Of course you should. It's not an easy thing to do, but it's not as terrifying once you're up there. In some ways.
Yeah.
But we'll get you there eventually, Gordon. I'll tell you. Here's some text coming in. I have dyslexia. I'm in my 60s. I spend hours writing out spelling, which I'd never be any better at. I love my home parish, but I go into severe anxiety when people there who are in schools meet show up, and I still believe they look down on me and how stupid I was. And now I end up waffling. That's a pity, because, as you said, you're Ben, high IQ, dyslexia. Not a stupid child.
And
I don't think there's any such thing as a stupid child anyway.
Absolutely.
The stupid adults.
Yeah.
And my daughter says the text was diagnosed with dyslexia in second class. And once she was diagnosed, things started to get better for her. Her teachers have been amazing, and her reading is coming on all the time. She loves audiobooks, and they are a great way for her to read at the same level as their peers and keep the interest in books. Thankfully, there are so many audiobooks available and tools. You mentioned that, and apps and so on today. And I'll take another one from a Kildare listener who says, it's great that dyslexia is being highlighted on the show this morning. I have 2 daughters who have it, one diagnosed in primary school, one in secondary. They both have got great support in school and college. My eldest is working in what she loves, and my other daughter is doing great in college. I'm certain I am myself, but never diagnosed both. My daughters are gifted in sport and music and thrive in this. Don't worry. They all find their path and get on in life. So that's useful. Thanks for highlighting this topic. Another says, Gordon is describing our troubles with our daughter, says Jules. Phonics nearly broke us. And while she was in the infants classes, she was up in the middle of the night with nerves. And now in third class, she's exhausted from trying to keep up. So what do you say to her, I wonder? It's tough. It's tough keeping up.
It is tough keeping up, yeah.
And it's tricky, but they should stay at it. My daughter Sienna is in her second year in a reading school in Tallis, says Amy. Sienna has gotten as far as second class in the mainstream school and literally couldn't read or write. In the last year and a half in St. Rose's, the change in Sienna has been amazing. Not only her ability to read, but it has given her the confidence she deserves. We need to save these schools. Is there a threat to the reading schools?
Yeah, I suppose that's reason why I wrote in here.
Yeah,
you
sure.
Know? Yeah, I believe there's an NCSE report. I haven't read the report. My wife read it to me.
Okay.
But yeah, and there's talk about removing these schools, and that's why I contacted the show.
Sure.
Because at the end of the day, I think for me, you know, I have the benefit through Ben, and I can see that. But my concern is that these will go and they'll cease to be a part of the school setup that we need. And again, what I want to see is, you know. You know, there's people turned away every year to try and get into this.
Oh, yeah.
We were one of the very, very lucky ones. And that's
why
we were told you must take this place if you get this place.
Yes.
And again, I go back to it. I was sceptical, but I'm not anymore. I can see the progress.
You've seen the light.
Well, I have.
Yeah.
But what upsets me is the fact that so many children don't have the opportunity. I wonder to myself, more so now in the last couple of months, what I might have been able to do or what I might have been able to achieve, how my life would have gone a different way if I'd been given the tools, you know, to go back in and then be able to perform properly, you know, throughout school and finish.
Well, it's important to say, I was thinking about this, the sliding doors of, in your case, literacy.
Yeah.
If you mightn't have ended up in the business you're in.
True,
you're in a successful business.
Yes,
you employ 30 people.
I do,
you have a beautiful wife and gorgeous children. If you had been a great reader with all the abilities, you could have gone on a different carriage.
Yeah.
You know, so the world falls, the cards fall where they fall.
Maybe true, yeah, maybe true.
So I wouldn't be inclined to be regretful, but wistful certainly.
I'm not, but I suppose I wonder and I'm looking forward to seeing how Ben progresses through his life and what he can
precisely,
do.
Precisely,
there's certainly things that I suppose I think, I mean, look, I'm 40 and I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up.
I just wonder,
was there things that I wanted to do and trying to achieve, and I mean, you know, I remember filling out the CAO form and thinking that, you know, I was going to do this and of course it was very wishful thinking. I might have been a magnificent doctor that I wasn't able to be, but indeed I'm very thankful for the life I have, and I'm very, very lucky and very fortunate.
And did you stay in the car business? Is that what
I did? I did. And I've again, you know, in my business life, same as there's probably a few people who know me now listening in who are saying to themselves, that's why he never takes any notes in the meetings.
There
and
you
that's
go.
Why he never brings any books in.
I suppose
I left the car dealership
when
it started to become difficult for me, when I started to have to fill in forms and write down addresses of customers and read certain things to people. And then I started my own business with a bucket and sponge and I've managed to move on. And again, I talk. I don't email. I send about 50 emails a year and they're small.
Yeah, they're brief
small
and
emails,
to the point.
Exactly,
that makes sense.
But it really is something for me to see Ben, and to see Ben come back to me with the Wilson book and try to teach me and take an interest in me as a grown up.
It's a great turnout for the books. There's a petition online if people want to support keeping these wonderful reading schools, which is my.uplift.ie, and you find petition there for Save Our Reading Schools. Breda was on to say, my granddaughter is dyslexic and her mother found a particular font on the Amazon Kindle that is dyslexic friendly. How about that? It's been
a great
help. The only difference that I can see is that the bottom of the words are shaded darker than the top and the spaces between letters is a little bigger, and it may be of help to people. The font is called Open Dyslexic Font. Are you familiar with this font?
Yeah, my operations manager, he sends me emails in this font. It's somewhat helpful,
but it's a good effort. My 9-year-old is in a reading class since September. It feels like we won the lotto. It's amazing. Husband was diagnosed a few months after our son, just like you, as his symptoms resonated so much with him. Reading schools rock. We should have one in every community. This is a lot of feedback on this topic. Miles Duffy is in Doolin. He says, our son Jamie has dyslexia and is doing his mock leaving cert at the moment. He knows all his stuff. Very clever. He can get help such as a reader, scribe, laptop, etc., which is great. But All he needs is a little more time. Another half hour will make all the difference for him to read and digest the answers. Why, oh, why can't the Department of Education just give these wonderful children that extra time? It's all they need.
That's a great point.
Gordon, it's been great to see you. And thanks for coming in and speaking so frankly about your story, because it's a corner of the education world we don't know probably a huge amount about in mainstream as such. But we wish you and Ben and, of course, Lauren and Gordon Jr. All the best in everything you do. And thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks a lot, Ryan.
Not at all. Gordon Goodwin joining us live in studio this morning. And the text number is always 51551. It's 10 to 10.